Jerry?
Oh, can I change the subject?
Not quite yet. I just want to say, what I'm hearing is a number of disagreements, discussion about basically about our society and about the shape of our practice, but I'm not really hearing any disagreement about our practice. That's about the Dharma. What I, you know, I would like to go on and take Jerry's question next, but it may not be entirely comfortable for any one person or for myself, but I welcome the discourse and the opportunity to hash things out or to put them, lay them out, even if we don't, even if we have things that are unresolved. You know, and that's okay. That's okay with me, and I hope that I'm hearing it okay. But I just wanted to say that. Yes?
You sure you want to call on me?
I don't know.
I'm not sure if there's a disagreement about Dharma or our practice either, but my understanding of non-duality is that it does not ignore the ordinary dualistic world. Mm-hmm. And in the ordinary dualistic world, it may be the case that there are some who have miraculously, or not miraculously, with supreme effort, moved beyond gender bias. But there's a lot of the world that we live in today, including the world right here, I think at Berkeley Zen Center, a lot of us who have not moved beyond gender bias. And so for those of benighted souls, myself included, who live in that category, to hear about Dogen's teaching on this matter is very valuable, and far from an insult to an achievement that actually hasn't been achieved.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, and then I'm going to go to Jerry.
Probably sidestepping this completely, I was puzzled in the passage again and again when he talks about acquiring the Dharma. That, I don't know what is actually being translated there, but it kind of runs in the face of the Dharma being something that one has already.
I'd have to really look at, let me, I don't want to get hung up.
It's not a logic to realize.
Yeah.
So it's that whole question in his teaching about what it means for a person to be realized, and that the difference between somebody who has acquired Dharma and not acquired Dharma throws me back on this question of enlightenment as being some other state that one somehow has to achieve.
I'd have to look at the language here, but I think my understanding is, irrespective of the translation or of the words that he may or may not use, Dogen is often first of all, we have enlightened nature. We are enlightened nature. In fact, he retranslated that phrase. On the other hand, we're not always awake to it. I think being awake to to one's true nature. When you wake up, when you go to bed and you sleep, when you wake up, do you acquire the new day? Or is it already there and you just wake up to it? That's the way I see him. That's my understanding of how Dogen phrases.
Right, except that in this passage, so much of his trying to get the monks to understand who is a teacher.
Yeah, I've said this.
It's kind of this idea that some people have it and some don't.
I've said this before. My understanding is every Dharma teaching is medicine. Every Dharma teaching is designed to bring us back into a balance from a place that we were unbalanced. So if he emphasizes something, it's not because that's the absolute truth. It's because he feels he needs to, in this set of circumstances, this is what he has to emphasize. That's the way I see it, anyway. But I'd like to go to Jerry, and then I want to get back to the text. Jerry?
This is something I was wondering about since the beginning. You talked about it this morning. And in the first paragraph, he says, a teacher will not be in the dark about cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only thing that was interesting to pick out.
That's the one particularity
that characterizes the teacher. And then there's this whole stuff about the fox and shape-shifting, which reminded me of the story of the master that gets turned into a fox.
That's right.
Because he doesn't understand the nature of cause and effect.
That's
and
right.
I just was interested in what you had to
he's very aware of that story when he's framing this, and he's turning it on its head. He's playing with that. You know, the story is of the master, some ancient master, who was asked, does an enlightened being
is he subject to
cause and effect? And this guy says no. And because he says that, after he says that, he's reborn as a fox for, you know, thousands of years. 500 years, whatever, a long time. And then he shows up in the back of the lecture hall, and the teacher, I'm forgetting who was the person who was teaching, he was asked, you know, this student asks, and they have a private discussion afterwards, and he said, who are you? So formerly, I was the abbot of this temple.
Yes.
I gave this answer, and I was reborn as a fox for 500 years. So I asked you the question, and the present abbot says, yes. They do pay attention to, they have to pay attention to cause and effect. And with that, he was released. And I think, then they had a funeral, right? For
They found the fox's body.
And the monks wanted to know, why are we doing a funeral for this fox? Is that correct?
Yeah.
They rode to the other side of the mountain in order to find
him. Right, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that is what he's talking about as enlightenment or waking. It's like really being aware that all of our words, thoughts, and actions have consequences, and being aware, awake to them, and conscious of what we do.
Another version of that story has the present abbot saying, not yes, but says an enlightened person does not ignore.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
Is it
I thought like maybe it almost is one with cause and effect or something.
No, it does not ignore. That's the language that I remember. Yeah, Denise?
Another translation is cause and effect are clear.
Okay. Anyway, however we translate this, I think Jerry's brought us back to what the standard is that Dogen is looking at, right? So can we go on? I don't want to read all of these stories because I sort of like to get through the first half today. But the subsequent story, I mean, there's, first of all, just to point out this wonderful Zhuxian, when he became a teacher, he said to his assembly, "I got half a ladle at Papa Linji's place, and I got half a ladle at Mama Moshan's place, which together made a full ladle. Since that time, after having fully digested this, I have been satisfied to the full." This is a wonderful, just a wonderful expression. Half a ladle at Papa Linji's place, and half a ladle at Mama Moshan's place.
What happened to Mama Moshan? I mean, she's not in our formal lineage. Where is she?
We changed her name. Well, it's not our lineage. She was in another lineage. I mean, lineages keep bifurcating.
Yeah.
But she is in, she's in the record, in the Chinese record of Zen masters and abbesses. So she's got a place.
I mean, some of these folks had hundreds of Dharma errors.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, I suggest maybe we can find a copy of Miriam Levering's record of Moshan, and it would be great to have that in our library. So then we go to the story of Maoxian, and just to point out, I don't want to go through this whole story, but these monks show up and they're they want to visit Yangshan, who is Yakusan Igen in our lineage. And they come to the monastery and they're having an argument at night about this story that was a famous story in the record of the sixth ancestor. Probably you know it, where they're arguing about they're in Six Ancestors, they're seeing a flag wave in the wind, and so they're saying, well, it's the flag that's moving, and another one says it's the wind that's moving, and the Sixth Ancestor says, it's your mind that's moving. So here, what's interesting, she's listening on the other side of the wall while they're having this argument, and she says, "How lamentable, you 17 blind donkeys. How many straw sandals have you wasted in your futile search for the Dharma? The Buddha Dharma has not even appeared in your dreams." And it's like, again, the 17 monks did not resent Maoxian's disapproval. In other words, they were real students. They really wanted to understand what was happening. And they were ashamed. And they took this abuse, which, you know, we don't talk so harshly in this Zendo. And so they inquired about the Dharma, and she said, "Step forward." And as the 17 monks were walking towards her, 17 monks, picture this, you can really see it, you know, with your cinematic eye. As the 17 monks were walking forward towards her, Maoxian said, "It's not the wind that's moving, it's not the flag that's moving, it's not the flag moving, it's not the mind moving." And they were awakened. In other words, get rid of all your conceptions. They express their gratitude, establishing the formal relationship of teacher and disciple, and quickly return to Western Chu, their own region. In the end, they never climbed Yangsha. They recognized her, and they didn't even bother to proceed up the mountain to meet the purported Zen master, the actual Zen master, Yangsun. Truly, this incident was not something that could have been accomplished by one on even the three wisdom stages or the ten noble stages. It is the practice of the way in the unbroken transmission from Buddha and ancestors. Then he goes on and he begins, he talks and he says, today, when the position of abbot or head monastic falls vacant, a monastery may invite a nun who appears to have acquired the Dharma to fill the vacancy. When we go back, I'll try to look at what the language actually is. And I have the... Now, you've been translating Chinese, though, right?
Not actively.
Okay.
I'm
because this is all in Japanese. This is in the Dogen is in Japanese. But he goes on. He says, when one makes it one's goal from the depths of one's being to throw body and mind fervently into the practice of Buddha Dharma, the Buddha Dharma will always have compassion for that person. A wonderful, wonderful expression. The Buddha Dharma will always have compassion. So, compassion is the atmosphere of the Buddha Dharma. Ross?
I'm just sorry that Tamar's not here because the story about them not going up the mountain and leaving feels like it addresses what she was talking about, being upset about the person that really being recognized that woke up. Deshan, I think it was, with the books and the mind refreshers.
I think it's true, but what I was hearing was what was painful to her was that no teacher, no contemporary teacher points out the lack of recognition right here, whether it's here in this Zendo or in other places that she searched. So that's what I was hearing was that it wasn't that she wasn't recognized, it's that nobody noticed among ourselves. Did we notice that she wasn't recognized? And that's a point.
Just to throw in another thing, there is the tradition in Zen of these kind of informal people, not only women, who are kind of like that, a Zen master may say, oh, go see that old codger.
Right.
And it could be, well, who the hell is he? He's just a bum or something. So it's not totally like she was a woman, therefore she couldn't be a teacher. There are other... that's why I noticed the woman thing, but I sort of thought, well, this is like those stories where they say, go see the cook, and he'll make a fool of you.
Right.
So, like, are people like Han Shan and so on, there are these people who were not teachers, but they were kind of recognized as enlightened beings, just kind of hanging out someplace. So, in that sense, maybe it wasn't quite so weird.
Well, it's within the tradition. On the other hand, we know Han Shan's name. We know a lot of men's names, and then we have these stories of these sort of anonymous tea women. It's out of proportion to the recognition, our ability to actually name them. That's why in I like really like in the when they do the women ancestors in San Francisco Zen Center, they in the echo it says women known and unknown, and I think that that's it's important to recognize that in every it's not basically we need to recognize history that's forgotten or lost, not just here in Zen, but in everything, where real work was being done and we don't know the people's names, whereas we tend to know the men's names. That's all. That's all. It's not that those stories don't exist.
Men are the writers of history, aren't they?
Often, yeah.
Very often.
Right. So, one more thing that I want to, which I really love, just as a piece of writing, it's in the middle of. Middle of page five. It's like square in the middle of page five. What is so exalted about a man? Space is space. The four elements are the four elements. The five aggregates are the five aggregates. For a woman, it is the same thing. In acquiring the Dharma, all acquire the Dharma equally. All should pay homage to and hold in esteem one who has acquired the Dharma. I just, there's something about that language. What's so exalted about a man? Space is space. The four elements are the four elements and the five aggregates are the five aggregates. There's something about that that just really resonates with me.
Even Buddha didn't get that until later.
That's true. And even the question in my mind is whether the Buddha would have gotten it if Ananda hadn't made the case really forcefully. Yeah.
Just to come back to that point, since Denise is raising it, you know, in our tradition, there is in this country much more of a tradition of women being in positions of power and being able to be teachers, but in the Theravadan tradition in Asia, there's not. Women, Ellen, you're more articulate to this than I am. There's women are still struggling to be able to have recognition as teachers and to carry lineages. And
well, it's more literal, it's more precise than that. Very few are able to have ordination.
And so for me, it's very helpful to study this and to know this exists because this is the canon or the teaching that supports the way in which we practice our own. Because it's not so in other parts of the world and other
parts of
Buddhism, contemporarily.
Yeah. When I was in Germany this summer, before I went to Friedrich's place, I was teaching at the Tibetan Center in Hamburg, and the people who run that are these nuns who have full ordination in, they've gone to Taiwan to have full Mahayana ordination. And it is not recognized within their tradition. Completely not recognized. They do it because they are completely sincere and really want to throw themselves into the practice as fully as they can. But their tradition itself does not recognize that ordination. And that's not so. That's true in the Tibetan tradition. That's largely true. There are very few fully ordained women in the Theravada traditions in Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka. All of those have had to go to Taiwan, which is, you know, sort of what Dogen is talking about, like Well, there was an openness in China. So they still have to go to China to get this full ordination, but it's not recognized within their own tradition. And it is a source of heartache for them. Real sorrow and heartache.
Wasn't there some recent, like within the last year or two, news that something happened in Southeast Asia and it was considered real shocking?
Yeah, what it was, I'm forgetting his name. There was a Western monk in the tradition of Achan Cha, who was a Dharma brother of Achan Amaro and Achan Pasano, who were here at Abayagiri. He was in Australia. He gave full ordination to a woman, and he was kicked out of their order. So these are the social dimensions of the Dharma, and one thing I would say, which we don't, few of us are kind of have much contact or knowledge of sort of what's going on in Soto Zen in Japan, but my feeling has been that one of the things that's really a powerful responsibility that we have, that we've been enacting, is to, well, there are two. One is that we've been manifesting lay practice in a really serious, thorough way. And this is also something that Dogen talks about here in this section. And the other dimension is that we've been validating the practice, the leadership, the transmission, the awakening of women in America. And this has a feedback loop effect on Japan. It's slow. Dogen says, furthermore, what is called a layman in Song Dynasty China is a young gentleman who has not yet left home. Some live in small huts with their wives, others live alone and remain chaste. And even though we must say that they are still in the dense forest of defilements, when one of them attains enlightenment, itinerant monks will gather to do obeisance and seek instruction, just as they would from a master who has left home. So, at this stage in his life and practice, Dogen is still really talking about and validating lay practice, which is, I think, another thing that pretty much failed to be influential, but resonates with us.
And that's another hierarchy that's similar to the men-women thing there.
Yeah.
Like it would be unheard of in Southeast Asia, I think, for
yes.
A monk to bow to a layperson.
Not entirely. Not entirely. I mean, the place where it's interesting, where there's more flexibility in this, is in Burma. I just finished reading this amazing book. It's kind of the record of Dipa Ma. Do people know of her? She was a laywoman, Burmese, and she was really a primary teacher for Sharon Salzberg, Joseph Goldstein, and some others. I think Wes Nisker went and visited. It's just, it's a wonderful book. And she had students who were monks. I mean, partly in that tradition, which is interesting, is that the monks are not really meditators. So they go to, if they want to meditate, they go to meditation teachers. And she was a meditation teacher. But she was a lay person with children, family, lived in the middle of a slum. It's a fantastic book. It was like laying on our bed. Lori had finished it, and I just picked it up and started reading it. And
who wrote it?
I forget who it's sort of assembled. I don't know who the author is, but Dipa Ma, D-I-P-A-M-A.
Knee Deep in Grace? Is that the one?
I don't know. Is that it? That's the title, Knee Deep in Grace. So we have a few minutes, and basically we finished this first half, and tomorrow I want to go on to the second half of the fascicle. But any questions, thoughts? We haven't fallen into validating pillars, have we? That's me, Helen.
I don't know. Pillars?
Pillars, yeah, and rocks. That's not the spin we're putting on this, right?
I'm encouraged.
Okay. Let's hope that continues. I don't know. Questions, thoughts?
Thought I had was that this whole writing of Dogen's seems a lot more accessible than some of his other writings. It's easier to understand this. It's just, you know, it's like a, I don't know.
Yeah, there are fascicles like that, and there are fascicles that are really tough.
Yeah, well, I mean, compare this to the Genja Koan or Mountains and Rivers, and, you know, it's like, oh my God.
Genja Koan is one of the more accessible ones.
Wow.
Yes.
Could you talk more about the effect of the West on Japanese Zen?
I can talk a little about it, we have a relationship. There's a Soto office in San Francisco. And there have been monks who've been living here, some who've been coming back and forth. And, you know, it's hard to say in a very particular way what the effect is. But you can see there are monks who are both junior monks and older monks who are interested in what's going on here. And I think one of the more concrete, anyway, this is the way I feel about it, one of the most concrete effects is that for the last, I don't know, 6 or 8 years, Suzuki Roshi's son, Hoitsu, has been one of the most senior teachers at Eiheiji. And Eiheiji is like, Eiheiji and Sojiji are sort of like the Annapolis and West Point of Soto Zen training. They really are when you go there. I mean, actually, some people really like it. I don't. But this is where they are turning out the next cohort of leading priests. To have invited Hoitsu Suzuki, who's not, the Suzukis were never high status priests. They were pretty much local. But it's really, I've always felt it was a validation of Suzuki Roshi's legacy in the West that they were able actually to see Hoitsu and to see his qualities and to bring him in, which is, I mean, I don't know, some of us know him and have met him. He's an extraordinary human being. And, you know, you don't encounter, I've not encountered a lot of teachers in these large monasteries who have a real openness and flexibility. Just as human beings, not to necessarily to the West. Hoitsu is one of the most flexible and joyous human beings I've ever met. And when you're with him, you feel good, which I think there's some family quality that people felt around Suzuki Roshi as well. And I think that that's I think their recognition of him and keeping him, it wasn't just a symbolic thing like, oh, we'll give him a 2-year position. They're keeping him there because he's actually really training monks in a way that fits what's needed in society. And I think that that's a certain recognition of the validity of what we're doing in the West. Ross?
I believe that Linso Inn was a training temple many years ago. It had not been that way in more recent times. The Zendo had become like a storeroom, and when you guys went over there, it got cleared out, and the Zendo became a space for people to come. And there have been Americans in our family that have come over there to do practice period, and that's really a direct reciprocity of America going back to Japan and kind of opening something up.
Right. A group that I went with was the first group to go there in 1989, and we slept in the Zendo, we practiced the Zendo, and the family realized we have something here, and they rebuilt the temple and so that it could accommodate people coming in.
I'm thinking about another way in which Western Americans have had some influence, or there's a synergy going on. Now, correct me, because I may not know this accurately, but I believe in Japan, women train in their nunneries, and men train in the monasteries. And it's only in a few monasteries that take Westerners where women and men train together.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few exceptional women who have trained with Japanese teachers and have been transmitted in Japan by their Japanese teachers who are American. I'm thinking of Taihaku Priest is one. I'm thinking of Grace's time with her teacher, although she didn't get transmission from it, I don't think. I'm thinking of Tenku Ruff as another person. I'm sure Diane Benage. There are a few others where there's that kind of relationship that's happened that's, I think, new.
Yeah, Diane Benage, who probably, I don't know if any of you know her. She's in Mount Freedom, Pennsylvania, I think. Mount something. In Pennsylvania. She's an American woman. She is the highest rank priest, Soto priest, that we've ever had in the United States. She has the rank that would enable her to lead a training monastery. They're very into ranks. This is a position. It's not to say she's more enlightened or anything else, but she has a formal recognition of position higher than Suzuki Roshi ever had or Maizumi Roshi ever had. There's never been anybody previous to her who's had this position. So, these things are happening. I think we need to end. And is Kinhin after this?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much, and bring your questions, and we'll proceed with Dogen's polemic tomorrow.